Hello and welcome to Monty and Ryus versus Movies.
I'm Ryus.
I'm Monty. We are still in the post-apocalypse.
Literally filmically.
Literally, I think we are mid-apocalypse. We're more in a Mad Max than a Road Warrior.
Yeah, it's more Mad Max than Road Warrior.
There's still the veneer of civilization. It's just kind of breaking down around us.
It is. It's even breaking down in this apartment.
Oh, man. It's going great, you guys.
I got in a fight with my own dog today.
Oh, your dog's a jerk, though. You're a jerk, little Bianca.
She was a jerk, but nonetheless.
So here's the thing. We watched a movie called Atolladero, which I'm going to spell because you may not instinctively know how to spell it. It is Atolladero. It is a post-apocalyptic movie from Spain from 1995.
It is set in a town called Atolladero, which is in Texas.
Now, they say it's set near a town. It's one of those...
Well, this is like one of those post-apocalypse where there was some kind of a war or something, and all the survivors moved into cities.
Yeah, so there's...
Leaving these empty little towns where a few creeps showed up and took up home. But these are the poor, the outcast, the destitute.
Yeah. The opening crawl, from what I can remember or make out from my notes, is that we achieved space travel, changed our minds, wealthy landowners rule over the police. So there are megalopolises. Giant cities, which we do not see.
Well, we see a guy driving in L.A.
We see the tops of some palm trees.
We see a palm tree during the closing credits. That's a megalopolis.
But mostly we are in the vast desert wastelands between these cities, which is good news because it's easier to get a desert wasteland than a megalopolis on a budget.
Yes, and this movie is definitely on a budget.
So this movie barely exists. If you search on Google for it by its name... The movie is the fourth thing. Everything else is just letting you know that Atolladero is, in fact, a Spanish word.
Yes.
It barely came out in theaters. It did, like, a handful of film festivals.
Yeah, did a bunch of festivals.
Because it's 1995, and put that in context, this is, like, your post-Pulp Fiction, El Mariachi Clerks world, where people could make weird movies like this. And then it had... A real tiny release in Spain, and that is it.
Nowhere else in the world has seen this movie. Now, you can go to the director's website. His name is Oscar Aibar.
A-I-B-A-R.
Mm-hmm. And see some stills and some footage from this movie.
And it looks great.
It does. It looks great. We had to watch it on a third generation dubbed
VHS
tape. We had to hook up the VHS player for this, my friends.
Because this is not on streaming. This is not on Blu-ray. This is not on DVD. This movie, the only reason we know about it is because Ryus has deep, deep film knowledge. The only reason we have a copy of it is that she worked at an amazing video store.
I worked at a video store which went out of business.
Pimpick. Say its name.
That was a Video Vertigo in Seattle.
Woo!
And when they went out of business, the other person that worked there, there were only two employees. It was a little hole in the wall. And we kind of divided up all the good movies. Yeah. I got a bunch of the John Waters. The other employee got a bunch of other stuff. Andy Milligan, I think. He got a lot of Andy Milligan. And, we've gone our separate ways.
That's a shame.
But in my secret hidden box of VHS tapes, one of them is Atolladero.
And you found it very quickly, too. That was amazing.
I always know where it is, man. So this movie is a testament to who I was in the 90s.
Yeah.
Because, man, is it embarrassing to look at and say, I used to love this movie now. Because it is inappropriate.
It is also a testament to the kind of things people were making that were like, there was a whole bunch of post-Pulp Fiction, Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag, Things to Do in Denver While You're Dead sorts of thing. This isn't like that. It's a post-apocalyptic movie, but it is the kind of sense that the rules of storytelling have been overthrown. You can do anything you want.
Right.
And what's weird is, judging by the director's website, this movie looks amazing.
Yeah, it's shot in, like, this beautiful widescreen.
Super widescreen. So widescreen that even though it is letterboxed on our widescreen television, because it's a VHS tape, it means it's a, the image we're seeing is a 4x3, and the bottom third of the screen is all subtitles. So there's this real narrow strip at the top that is the movie. So you can tell this was widescreen. They had dreams of showing this in a Cinerama.
Yeah. But it's also a spaghetti western. Yeah.
But what I was getting to is it all looks pretty muddy on the VHS. Then we go to the director's site and go, oh, wow.
That's what that looked like?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a spaghetti western set in a post-apocalyptic world.
Right, like Six String Samurai is a samurai movie set in an post-apocalyptic world, sort of.
But I would argue, even as a spaghetti western, it's more of a film noir. It's about a cop who fights against the wealthy and the corrupt.
But everyone in the movie except him is corrupt.
Exactly. Well, that's a film noir trope, right? The least evil person in an evil world.
Right. And in order to immediately establish the evilness of... Okay, the town of Atoyodaro is run by a guy named the Judge. The Judge is 150 years old.
The first thing we see in the movie is a school bus
driving down a deserted desert road.
Yeah. We don't ever know where it's coming from or going to.
No, there doesn't seem like there's a school around. Anyway, Iggy Pop gets out of a limousine that's parked by the road and just stands in the front of the school bus until it stops. It looks so cool.
Yeah. Oh, let's address that real quickly. Iggy Pop is in this movie.
Oh, yeah, he's one of the main... He's the main...
He's the worst guy. He's not the main bad guy, but he is the worst bad guy.
Yeah, he's the... The judge's main right-hand thug and assassin.
Yeah. So he goes onto the bus.
He goes onto this bus, and there's, like, a bunch of kids on it. And he walks through the bus and just picks one and takes it away.
And some movies would let that kind of... rest with you and go, well, now your imagination will...
Yeah.
No, later on,
we get to see this kid tied up, being photographed, and we also hear Iggy Pop say he's going to fuck him.
Yeah. It happens right away.
Thankfully, that part is off camera, so we can hope that the only thing that happened to that poor kid on the set was he had to sit in a gym with his hands behind his back, but oh my god.
The idea is that Iggy Pop does horrible things to these children while the judge watches.
Right. If there's going to be... what we know early on, we learned that there's going to be a fight this afternoon.
Oh, yeah. People are talking about the fight. And that's a post-apocalyptic trope.
Right.
There's a couple other movies, people have talked about the upcoming big fight.
Right. And so we know that the judge, before a fight, has to get all riled up. So he likes to watch people abuse children... in order to get his blood pumping, which when you're 150 years old, find out what makes his blood pump.
Let's jump ahead to that, because this movie doesn't care about the order of events, and I think
I don't think so. So, at some point...
The judge is very old. He looks like he's wearing a cheap rubber mask of an old person, as indeed...
He is.
He is kept alive by machines, which we are told... At a point when he's in a car, in the limo.
He has 4 hours of battery life on his life support.
Yeah. And what do they do when they're told that? Nothing. They wait 4 hours, then say, oh no, the judge is dying.
Right. So then they figure out that they can restart him if they can get an electrical charge into his heart. So they hook him up to the car with jumper cables, and then they hook the car up to, like, a telephone line.
Yeah.
And then they have to do some surgery inside of him. So Iggy Pop, for some reason, I would like to add in this scene, is wearing surgical gloves.
Yeah.
It's the only clean thing in the movie is this one surgical glove you get a glimpse of.
This movie is so mid-90s edgy.
Oh, it is the edgelordiest of edgelords. It was trying so hard to be offensive.
And...
Yeah. I love that. It's like a GWAR concert in a way.
Concert. I'm going to use that to drag us back to linear time.
Okay.
I really liked the opening credits song.
The opening credits song is really good. I think that...
Iggy sang it.
Yeah, Iggy sings it, but it's like sounds like a Marty Robbins song. Yeah. I think Iggy should do some Marty Robbins covers if he hasn't.
No, I'm into that. Yeah.
When he listens to this podcast, I'm sure he'll agree with me.
It is weird how much I like the song, because then sonically this movie is just terrible. There's a lot of anytime there's a chance of a dog being nearby, there is a soundtrack bed of like four barking dogs.
Yeah, there's four barking dogs constantly, so it's constant low-level annoyance while you're watching it.
You want to get to the cops?
Okay, there are two cops. One is the sheriff. There's three cops.
That's right, there's three cops.
One is the sheriff. I don't remember his name, we just call him the sheriff.
Yeah.
One is Lenny, our protagonist. Lenny really, really wants to go to the police academy in L.A. to be in some police academy films.
So first of all,
because they have a much better snack table.
Yeah, he's always wanted to be one of the Los Angeles Police Department, but apparently he can't do that and be.
He has to. but
all I'm saying is that the Los Angeles Police Force, even in the 1990s, was not known as the. Clean. They're gonna come shoot me.
Your best police force. But this is science fiction,
right?
So he desperately wants to join the police force because he saw a advertisement for it in a Silver Surfer comic.
Yep.
And the art for the advertisement was clearly a Tom of Finland drawing.
Yeah, which I think is a great illustration for a police department trying to advertise.
Sure. Those guys are big and uniformy.
Do you want big shiny boots that go up to your knee and probably jodhpurs and maybe not a shirt? Come on over. So he submits his notice that he is retiring in 1 week, which is very exciting because the young cop never does that.
Right. Also, he's not allowed to retire until he gets permission from the judge.
The judge.
That's a thing that he's going to ask permission today at the dog fight.
At the fight. We don't know if it's a dog fight.
Oh, it's a fight, yeah.
Just the fight. And that sets up our character. We learn that the cops aren't very good cops. Then I think they go to the gas station.
Yeah, we meet the judge's wife who is completely irrelevant to everything.
That's not true. She justifies the chase at the end.
She basically insists that the police officer accept a blowjob because she wants to prove that she's still the best whore west of the Pecos.
You guys, this
east
is
of the Pecos.
Yeah,
was confusing.
They said east of the Pecos, but it's set in Sonora Valley, Texas, and I think that's west of the Pecos.
And also, she didn't even charge him for it, so who's the worst? So who's a bad prostitute?
This is a gross movie.
This movie is gross. I am 100% saying that this movie is gross, and I'm probably a bad person for liking it.
There's also one of those scenes where you have a street preacher just yelling about how it's the end of the world.
Oh, yeah.
And I liked this because the sheriff looked at him and said, "You got 20 minutes to get out of town." And the preacher said, "Oh, yeah, okay, you got it." Normally, like, we just watched the terrible movie Priest, which is a lot like this one. Yes, we watched that one. There was Paul Bettany and vampires. There was that scene where
the lady priest
throws the rocks up into the air and he runs up them like a staircase.
You're right. That was a terrible movie. I just forgot.
But that also has a street preacher. And that street preacher's like, "No, I'm going to stick around here and sell my colored water." But this street preacher's like, "Oh, yeah, you got guns. I'm out of here."
But first he goes into the bathroom so that he can snort cocaine.
Oh boy. hang on. I want the listener to imagine, what's the edgiest way a preacher could snort cocaine? He opens up his Bible, and inside the Bible, like it's a hollow Bible.
It's got a little stash jar in it.
There's a cross, and you think, okay, well that's fine. He takes the cross out, and then puts cocaine on the cover of the Bible. Pretty edgy, and the cross turns out to be a straw.
So he snorts, and he also shapes the cocaine into a cross shape.
Yes, that's right. He snorts cocaine shaped like a cross through a cross off of a Bible, huh?
Take that, Jesus.
Your mind's blown now. This street preacher, he is
the real deal.
He does drugs.
It's true. And then
I do cocaine.
And then he pees blood everywhere.
Yeah, I bet he does.
So that's, no discernible plot reason.
Yeah.
Just because they thought that'd be pretty cool. Let's have him pee blood everywhere.
Yeah, All right, what do you got next?
At this point, So the dog, so the fight happens, and it is a dog fight.
Okay, when we say dog fight, they have a pit, which looks like it's about, I'd say, 4 feet deep.
4 feet deep,
and they toss some dogs in, and everybody's betting. And it's one of those movie bets where people are just shouting things and giving the one guy money, and he's not, like,
not
giving
writing down
slips.
Or even looking to see who handed him the money.
Yeah, they're just going, this one, that one, sell, sell, sell.
And also, these dogs are, and I'm sure that this was actually a relief to me, we don't actually see the dogs fight.
No.
In fact, they're just hanging out and they won't fight.
Yeah. It's very common to see dogs wagging their tails in movies, but this time we're told that's actually what's happening because there's a storm coming.
Yeah, there's a storm coming in and the dogs won't fight.
Which is weird because they seemed like they were in pretty good moods.
And at this point, while the dogs aren't fighting, Lenny decides to go up and ask the judge for permission to leave town.
So he goes up to this guy in a wheelchair with just an immobile rubber mask. And pretty quickly, Lenny gets thrown into the pit with the dogs.
Right. Maybe they'll fight now if we throw a guy in with them.
Yep.
Plus, you don't have permission to go to L.A. and be in the Police Academy movies.
It takes a long time, but eventually he shoots one of the dogs. And then he has a seizure. He has seizures.
Oh, yeah. He has seizures a lot. They did set that up earlier.
Sort of.
Vaguely. Someone mentioned seizures, but they didn't really make a big deal out of it.
As I think we have made clear so far, so much random stuff happens in this. It's really hard to tell what's going to matter for the plot and what is...
Right.
Like, the priest's drug problems don't really come into play. They just wanted us to know, he does cocaine!
Right.
So, they're about to shoot Lenny for messing up the dogfight, although it's not his fault. You should have taken the gun off him before you threw him in the pit, is what I say.
Yeah, and honestly, don't throw a guy...
But then there's lightning and thunder and tornadoes.
Oh, there is a tornado.
And then...
And that's where we first see the CG special effects in this movie.
Oh, boy. 1995 computer graphics.
On a budget.
A little worse than a full motion video CD-ROM video game.
Ah, bless their hearts.
So, Lenny escapes and drives away, but... Uh-oh, through a very, very badly shot scene, he runs head-on into Darlene, the sheriff's... Not the sheriff's, but the judge's wife. He killed Darlene. Darlene's dead! Remember Darlene?
Yeah, we saw her once. She was forcing herself on a police officer.
Yes, but the judge loved her very much, I guess, and that's all the reason he needs to make this now a chase. Also, I think the preacher died there, too.
Yeah, they also ran over the preacher, who... I don't know what happened.
Yeah. So now we're in a standard post-apocalyptic chase situation, except without...
Cool motorcycles.
Yeah, without cool motorcycles or shoulder pads or really the commitment.
Much of anything.
This movie did not take after Road Warrior. I think it was trying to be more of a Thunderdome.
And there's also a lot of...
Like, if the fight hadn't been a 4-foot-deep pit with a couple of friendly German shepherds, but had, say, a visual style to it that a George Miller can bring to a movie, I think that could have been cool.
Yes.
Like, plot-wise, it didn't do much different than...
Put some shoulder pads on those dogs, guys.
Yeah,
come on.
Absolutely. Okay.
So now there's a chase scene. Lenny's car gets smashed up, so he is on foot running away from them. He jumps down into an old abandoned oil pipeline, which has been shut down for years.
Yep. At this point, there's a posse of like 3 or 4 Mexican goons. One of them has a Spider-Man hat to keep the comic book theme going. This is based on a comic book. Somewhere around here, Iggy says, my favorite line in the movie, the judge wants to make a saddle out of that son of a bitch. We'll skin him and then hang him. I apologize for the voice. Actually, what we hear is somebody... Somebody in Spain?
Who sounds exactly like someone voicing a villain in an anime.
Yes! So
It is hilarious. The guy that dubs Iggy is my hero.
But it's all in Spanish, so
we're
reading the
lovely
subtitles. Anyway, my objections are, one, I don't think you can make a saddle out of a human. Our skin is just not going to leather up the way cows do. It's not thick enough.
It's not really that thick. I mean, I've seen books bound in human skin, and it's like a like a deer skin.
But those
so
have like a backboard
thin
inside them to...
Well, yeah. But I've also seen just pure human skin. Okay.
Yeah. And my other
problem, I'm a weirdo.
My other problem is saying we'll skin him and then hang him. Hanging him seems gratuitous, and it's going to be very difficult because his neck is going to be all gloppy.
Yeah, you could, are you going to hang him? Maybe they're going to hang him and skin him while he's hanging, because it'll be easier to pull the skin off.
No, they were clear. Skin him and then hang him.
Yeah, that's not...
You're just trying to be cool, Icky. Relax. So anyway, he's down in those tunnels, and we could not really make out what was going on because it's dark and it's a third generation VHS. Yeah. But they send a robot dog after him.
And at this point, you become very thankful that it is third generation VHS.
Oh, boy.
First of all, I think that robot dog is from Snow Crash.
I do not remember the details of Snow Crash enough.
I remember something called a Slam Dog that was a robot dog.
Well, this robot dog looks very much like 1995 computer graphics technology. And what's more, they could only animate it doing two things, running at the camera for about 10 feet, and I think running sideways for about 10 feet. And we see both of those many, many, many times.
Many times. And I'm so glad they're blurry, because honestly...
Yeah, those shots, in contrast with what the rest of the movie looked like, must have been really jarring.
Yeah, because when we look... Yeah, because from the stills and stuff, we see it's beautifully shot. But from the... crappy VHS tape, you're like, is that guy in a tunnel?
Yeah, so this is where they're hunting him at night, and the judge is in the limo, and his batteries are slowly running down.
And the doctor, there's a doctor with them.
Yes, they have a doctor.
The doctor's important. He is an alcoholic. He used to be...
Whoa, an alcoholic doctor? You're blowing my mind, man!
I know, it's crazy! This movie is crazy! So they've got this drunk doctor who's got the DTs. Used to be one of the best doctors in the world, but he made a mistake. He had patented a medical device that caused 1 million children to die screaming in pain.
Wow.
By accident. Well, when he first put it in, it worked fine. It's just a couple years later.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
Maybe
unplug the children after the first 10 or 20,000 die screaming in pain.
He has to Atoyadero to flee his shame.
Sure.
He's the only doctor in town. He's the only one that can keep the judge alive.
Yep.
He's the one that says, that battery's going to run down in 4 hours. And then they decide to continue the chase of Lenny.
I could be wrong, but I don't think they ever really explain why all these people are so dedicated to keeping the judge alive.
They never do, no.
Like,
Is in charge and he runs the town.
Yeah, and...
There's not much of a town.
We're told that their power derives from him. Like, Iggy, you can't go around murdering people if the judge isn't saying you can, but...
Right. Iggy's job is the judge's henchman, and when the judge is dead, Iggy is nothing. He's just another dude, apparently.
But I don't know. I don't buy that. I don't buy a lot of this movie. Okay, I want to read my description of this here.
Okay.
The judge breaks, comma, leaks a bunch of purple fluid, comma, and gets a jump start. There is no indication of why the audience should be invested in that. Because he's the villain! But they spend a long time, like, oh, what are we going to do about the judge? We gotta save the judge. Let's try this. It'll be... It's like an A-team stuck in the warehouse.
It's ridiculous.
And the whole time you're thinking, isn't that the bad guy? What do I care?
Iggy Pop is wearing a poncho, which I believe is supposed to remind us of Clint Eastwood.
I'm sure he brought it from
home.
It
really looks like an old lady's caftan.
Yeah. Which, it's good. Iggy is off-putting. Like,
yeah, he's very good in this movie because he is cast to be off-putting and a weirdo.
He already looks like somebody... He looks part lizard, so it makes sense seeing him in a desert.
Yeah, exactly. He was well cast. He did a good job.
Right. The next morning, Lenny sneaks out of the pipe, and he and the doctor steal the limo and drive off. I don't know why the doctor switched sides. Do you know why the doctor switched sides?
I don't know, but the doctor at this point starts talking about how Iggy Pop is how... What is Iggy's character name? Magnum or something?
Wesley?
Madden. He's like, the reason Madden's such a great killer is because he has an overdeveloped limbic system.
Oh, that's right. Overdeveloped limbic system.
And then for the rest of the movie, as long as the doctor is alive, he just talks about how lizard brains and how we're dominated by our lizard brains, but we shouldn't be. It just goes on. It's like a monologue for like pages and pages of script.
This is his death speech. That's right. They're driving away.
Oh, you're right.
They're driving away in the limo, and I liked the continuity of the limo because it started off clean and got dirtier as they went, which is what you get when you just shoot in sequence like they definitely did.
Yeah.
It broke down next to a picturesque location, which is very common in these movies. This was the Osage encampment.
Oh, that's right. They said it was an Osage Indian encampment. It was holy ground on a burial ground.
Yeah. So Lenny and the doc ran up the mountain and kind of hid behind some rocks. Then the other guys came, shoot, bang, bang, bang. Oh, the doctor's shot. And he just goes on and on about the limbic system. This is when the doctor says that humans are reptiles. So I wanted to throw that in.
Oh, okay. Throw it.
Humans, reptiles.
That's what the doctor says. And he's a medical man. He ought to know.
Yeah.
Because they are in a Native American burial ground, a shaman, a ghost comes up and makes them hallucinate for a while.
If you picture people in the desert coming upon a Native American who leads them underground and they start hallucinating, the image you have in your head is exactly correct. This is The Doors. This is Wayne's World 2 parodying The Doors. This is Natural Born Killers. This is that guy.
This is that guy. You know him. We all know him. It's that guy.
Somewhere around here, El Santo attacks Lenny. This is one of the members of the posse.
Lenny is about to escape, and El Santo, from nowhere, jumps on him from on top of a rock, but then we learn that El Santo is just one of the...
Yeah. El Santo, I guess we should explain, famous Mexican superhero, movie star...
Wrestler.
Shirtless, luchador mask...
Silver pants. Silver cape.
Fought an Aztec mummy.
Some Aztec women on the moon, I think, maybe, or something.
Possibly.
Aztec something. He fought a lot of Aztec robots, stuff. He fought a werewolf, a vampire, robots.
And one of the members of the posse was a big fan of his and dressed up like him and now showed up and attacked dressed like him and immediately got shot, which I guess was supposed to mean something.
I don't know what it meant.
Next, I have no memory of this, but this is the sentence I have written down, so I'm going to say it into the microphone. Lenny finds a mummy, comma, she turns into a beautiful, alive girl.
That happens when they're in the cave with the shaman. That's his hallucination.
Yeah, that's his hallucination. Okay.
Also, this movie does have some really cute lizards in it here and there.
Well, this section of the movie is called Lizard.
Yes, the movie's divided into four sections. Those sections are called The Men, The Dogs, The Guns, and The Lizard.
So you can see where they're going with that.
You can see what they're trying to do. They're just not quite there yet.
Yeah, like if it were Quentin Tarantino, the titles would have splashed up on screen with a giant, probably mariachi music, saying, The Lizards. But it barely happens.
Yeah.
So the judge is dead at this point. Lenny is trying to escape.
One of the people chasing Lenny is the sheriff that he spent all that time with. The sheriff is mad at him because Lenny thinks he's too good for this town.
Yeah. So the sheriff and Iggy are the only ones left chasing him. The sheriff tries to radio an announcement. The radios in this movie are ridiculous, and I don't want to go into how dumb they are. But let me just say that when I say he radios an announcement, it's nothing like what you imagine.
No, it's a whole video screen contraption. It is a contraption.
Iggy objects, and they have a showdown. Sort of, and they both die. Then Lenny gets back and steals their car.
Right, and Lenny now is free to go to L.A.
Yep, so Lenny's driving away, and he comes upon the third cop, who we skipped over because he was not established well.
His name's Vincent. He's basically a scrawny kid.
Yeah, he's the naive cop. I loved his costuming. He had a cop's uniform that was just a little bit too big for him,
yeah.
So he looked like a kid playing dress up. I really liked his look.
Yeah, he had a really good look, and he talks to Lenny for a minute and lets him go.
Yeah, he's like, well, you know,
maybe I could be sheriff.
I want to be sheriff. Here's a gun. Could you shoot me in the arm? And then I could be sheriff
because I'll be the hero who tried to stop you and couldn't.
But then.
Oh, yeah.
The real cops show up.
Now, these are Texas Rangers. They're not anyone that we've seen or heard of anywhere else in the movie. They've got a cool flying car like those cops in Blade Runner.
Yeah. Oh, we did earlier see a super train. It was on a big monorail, and the rail folded down into the ground to allow cars to go past. I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, and I didn't remember that. That's some of that beautiful high-tech CG I was talking about.
So yeah, some pretty cheesy, well, at this point, extremely cheesy CG shows a hover car fly over them and then land just over the hill.
So we don't have to actually have it in the shot.
So the Texas Rangers can come up and be silhouetted.
I stopped taking notes at that point because it got too silly.
I got it.
All right.
So it's three beheaded goons and they shoot Vince in the arm, conveniently enough.
Yeah, so now he gets to still be the hero.
One of them has what could be cyber eyes, but it doesn't look like it's inside his skull. It's just kind of
glued
an
to
eyepiece.
The helmet. It's like an eyepiece that's glued to his police helmet. I don't know if he's supposed to be a robot or what.
He uses it as X-ray vision, and he sees that Lenny, the person they've come here to get, is crouched down behind the car, behind the wheel, one of the wheels.
Right, he's on the other side of the police car, kind of hiding by a ditch.
Yeah, so the three Texas Rangers shoot a million billion rounds into the car.
Yeah, this is a Bonnie and Clyde style car shooting.
Except with nobody in the car, which he knows he's not in the car, and they never once think, well, you know, Steve, he's...
We could just walk around to the other side of the car and shoot him.
I can see him right there, he's just cowering.
Right, but also Lenny has a seizure, and somehow none of the bullets hit him because he's seizuring.
Oh man, I want that to be the plot point, like Equilibrium, but your seizures just happen to be tuned to the rate of fire of these guns, so every time you have a spasm, it pulls out of the way. That is not what happens. In fact, eventually they stop, walk slowly towards the car, and Lenny leans under it and shoots them all.
Yes, in the knees, but they still die.
Yep.
And then Lenny takes the old cop car that he's in at the beginning of the movie with the sheriff.
Yeah. He drives away. He shoots the road sign that says Atolladero. And that's a kind of a good shot, I think.
You know, it's a really good picture. You know, you get to see a road sign getting shot and then falling until it hangs at an angle.
It's the one we saw at the beginning of the movie coming into the town, and now he's leaving.
And as he drives off, he discovers some old dash cam footage of his friend the sheriff as he's dying.
This is the announcement he radioed. And I'm going to read it because it's, I guess, kind of the moral of the movie.
Oh, I didn't know you wrote it down. I'm so happy.
Well, this is the advantage of watching a subtitled movie.
Yes.
We see the sheriff, his friend, I guess, who was trying to kill him, never have a clean fight with anybody. Always look for an edge and shoot when he least expects it. Always be honest with yourself, but never with others. If you tell other people what you know, everybody will know what you know, but you only know as much as everybody else. Above all else, never get involved with a decent woman. She'll tie you to something which you'll never free yourself from. Now, is this gibberish on purpose?
Well, someone wrote it down, put it in the script, yes. So I don't know.
Did they know it was nonsense? Or was this supposed to be a genuine...
I don't believe they knew it was nonsense. I believe that they meant that from their heart.
All right. Then we see him get to L.A., which is... shown just by a camera pointed up, so you can see the top of a few palm trees.
You just see a windshield and you see somebody driving past a couple palm trees.
Yeah, and I think there's a hover car, and that's it.
Oh yeah, you're right. There is a hover car that passes overhead.
And then you get the closing credits, and there are bloopers! There are outtakes. There are people smiling at the camera when their name shows up, and it's awesome. So stupid.
It's pretty dumb.
So I think this is the only movie I've ever seen where it starts off with a cop saying, I'm going to retire in a week. And then everybody else dies, but the cop retires and goes on to live his dream job in Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's kind of a reversal of what you'd expect.
I guess Lethal Weapon, he always survives, but...
Yeah.
He never really gets to retire properly.
No,
usually his daughter is getting killed
to
or something.
Retire, and then his daughter gets killed, or his dog gets hit by a car.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson comes over and starts yelling racist gibberish at him. You know, something.
So, that was Atolladero. And I'm super excited we got to see that. This is a very rare movie.
It is a super rare movie that I happen to own.
Yes.
I have another super rare movie that I am dying to show you that's on VHS, too.
It's my turn to open this box, by the way.
That is for a different time.
Incidentally, I think pretty soon we're going to be doing an incomparable... We're on the Incomparable Podcast Network.
We are.
I think pretty soon we're going to do an Incomparable Members thing. Try to ask you politely if you'd like to support us. And we're going to do special members-only episodes. And I think we know what we're going to do for that
Yeah, one. You guys are going to be super excited.
If you're members. Otherwise, you're going to be mad at us.
They might actually be good movies.
They are good movies. Aren't we just doing all four Mad Max movies?
You are so bad at keeping secrets. You are the worst.
We might not be. That was a question.
I think we're going to watch... I thought we were just going to do, like, Fury Road. But I could do...
Everyone's talked about Fury Road, and I love Thunderdome. For how
everybody loves Thunderdome.
I like...
Road Warrior I love, but Mad Max isn't even post-apocalypse
No, Mad Max is boring. I like Thunderdome more than Road Warrior.
Everybody likes Thunderdome more than Road Warrior.
Yeah, they won't admit it, though. All right, let's find out what we're going to see next.
What exciting movie do we have from the box?
It says here, Zardoz! We're going to see Zardoz!
No, that's the worst thing that ever happened. Because yesterday I was scrolling through Hulu, and I saw an ad for Zardoz, and I was like, thank God we never have to watch that again.
You know,
and yet... I forgot it was in the box, and now we are hoisted by our own petard.
The box is working exactly as it was designed. You know,
the box is evil.
The Mothership episodes of The Incomparable. We do rocket surgery episodes where we watch bad movies, and I've been on a bunch of those. I love that. I watched the Emoji Movie for The Incomparable recently. I was not on the Zardoz episode because I find this movie nonsense. I used to have the novelization of this movie. It starts with a little explanation by John Borman that basically says, yeah, I don't know, man, drugs.
Great.
So we're gonna watch Zardoz and we're both excited about it.
One of us is excited about it. One of us is full of dread. Full of dread.
Full of dread. You want to talk about anything else before we go?
Anything good happened this week?
Oh, boy.
Anything super exciting?
What are we watching on television? I've been enjoying the Beat the Judges episodes of whatever show that is, Forged in Fire.
Forged in Fire. I am super excited because Critical Role has finally come back.
Super exciting.
That is something that has given our lives...
Structure.
Yeah. Because we decided a long time ago, like last year, that every Thursday night we're going to watch Critical Role together. We're going to make a nice... nutritious dinner that doesn't come entirely from a can.
Yep.
And we're just going to have a nice, quiet, soothing night. And then COVID happened and there was no Critical Role.
Yeah.
And we kind of fell out of our ways.
Yeah. And we're both working from home and days and nights have no meaning.
So now we've got our Thursdays back and we're very excited about that.
Let's go out on that.
Okay.
That's nice. Okay, bye.
Bye.